listening to the Gator Sports Podcast, brought to you by the Gainesville Sun and Gatorsports.com. This is a USA Today Network production, and your hosts, Graham Hall and David Whitley.
You are listening to the Gator Sports Podcast, presented by the Gainesville Sun. I am your host, Graham Hall, joined to my left by my co-host David Whitley.
Hello.
Back in the booth this week after we had Ainsley Lee here last week talking high school spring games, UF softball, how she got her start in this, I don't want to call it a failing business, but a business on decline that is going to, with people like her, have a resurgence, I'm sure, certainly. So it was great to have her on and introduce her to our readers and our listeners, certainly, who I'm sure have seen her work in the Gainesville Sun and on Gatorsports.com, but now I had a chance to hear from her. But we're back here with David to talk a whole lot of news in this off-season edition. Welcome back, my friend.
It's good to be here. It's big shoes to fill for 1 week. I'm sure Ainsley did an excellent job.
She did. Absolutely. She did. You know, and I was saying, she has so much to cover between 51 area schools and kind of threw her on softball there at the last minute and everything else that we got going on. It's a big role.
Yeah, I mean, we think that there's a lot going on at UF, and there is, but multiply that by 51 smaller schools and you have to do that. She's a one-man bureau,
yeah.
One-woman bureau.
Yeah, certainly. She runs it. Let's say that. In between, you know, FHSA meetings, everything, you name it. She does a whole lot. But you mentioned it. We bring the UF football discussion, basketball, you name it. It's the University of Florida, the Gator Sports Podcast, after all. And we are going to transition back to talking about the University of Florida this week, where there was a whole lot of news, and not even just softball, baseball, lacrosse, a new soccer coach, which we're going to talk to. We'll talk about all that, in the last two segments of this episode. But first, we got to talk about the moneymakers, football in basketball, where there was some recruiting news for both sports over the past week.
There are new bodies on campus are headed this way anyway.
Yeah, there are new bodies on campus. We will start there with the arrival of two players from Billy Napier's first signing class that arrived over the weekend. The first was David Connor. He actually got here on Mother's Day. He's an offensive tackle. Really, you know, offensive tackle is a huge need for this team. They had to address it in the transfer portal, adding Osiris Torrance and Cameron Waits. Multiple guys have come into this position group in several years from other schools, and now Florida is attempting to address that on the recruiting trail, getting Connor in here for all of summer, as well as getting Trevor Etienne. It's a hard name to pronounce, if you ask me. Etienne. I've had to really practice that. For the longest time, I thought it was Etine or Etwine.
Yeah, every time I hear it, I think I should be on Bourbon Street ordering a meal.
Yeah, you got to say with a little drawl, like, yeah. Etienne.
Give me the Travis Etienne tonight, please.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. You know, I think that getting both those guys on campus, especially because, you know, some uncertainty in the second string, certainly, I think with both those groups, running back, Naquan Wright still getting back. We haven't seen really much from Lorenzo Lingard. And then you have Montrell Johnson, a new guy who very promising, but not certain how he'll fare in the SEC.
Yeah, I think, you know, of those two groups, offensive line was the more striking need, just because you can't have one offensive line. You really need two offensive lines.
Exactly.
To be effective. And they need more bodies in there.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, obviously where they've targeted in recruiting. And I saw where they, you know, just signed or got a commitment from a kid, three-star, I guess. I'll be honest, I don't remember his name because there's so many guys that they're after. And until I actually see him on the roster, you know, and then I start paying attention. But yeah, hey, it's a body, and you know, people, I think they're still waiting for that big splash, the big splash commitment, a five-star so far, but and it hadn't happened yet. But these are the guys that you plug holes with and can be useful.
Yeah, you know, I tell people also not to get too invested right now in the rankings. I know people often see that three-star designation and they're like, oh, well, you know, good luck to you. But at this point in mid-May, when camps haven't even happened and guys are really not even getting into their senior season, getting a lot of offers, there's still 9 months left, if not longer, if they're going to sign in February for a lot of these kids. And so seeing an offensive tackle who's just a three-star I just caution people not to really get depressed by that, because we've seen quarterbacks, Justin Fields, a name that comes to mind.
It's funny, when they got the commitment from the 3-star wide receiver a few weeks ago, there was this pushback, like, you know, how good is he? But, and then I saw other guys, you know, who are now NFL all pros who are 2 stars and 1 star. Of course, that's not to say this is the next Matthew Stafford or somebody like that. But, you know, who was it? Like Tyreek Hill was a 2-star, something like that.
Yeah, you know, Antonio Brown was a guy who, you know, you know, that it has no bearing on how you're going to pan out.
Especially this early in their, I mean, they're not even played their senior season yet. And a lot of guys, especially at that age, because you're not talking about 21, 22-year-olds, you're talking about 16 to 17-year-olds who can, they really physically mature a lot at that age in 6 months to a year. So, and you know, one thing I think we're seeing from the Napier regime is that they're putting a lot of confidence in stock and their ability to project what these guys will do.
Yeah. And, you know, not exactly giving as much credence to the recruiting rankings themselves. You know, I know that Dan Mullen had that line pretty popular in his back pocket all the time, saying, you know, our board's a little bit different than where some of these other guys are ranked. And you know, that stuff, sometimes it's covering up your faults on the recruiting trail. I know that fans certainly are hoping that when Billy Napier is coming out and you know, posting those sunglasses emojis, that he really means it and really believes it, that Florida is landing players at, you know, you mentioned Tyree Patterson, the 3-star wide receiver from Eustis, and then, you know, Nigea Harris and Creed Whittemore, guys who are 3-star prospects that we may sit here in 5, 6, 7 months and be like, well, wow, you know, good thing that Florida landed them that early, because now they're sitting here top 100.
Yeah, we might. Now, if it is December 15th and all he has is a roster of 3 stars that he says, you know, this guy's got potential, you know, you want those are fine to have, but you also want some, obviously, 4 and, you know, cross your finger, 5 stars as well. But, you know, we're a long way to get there. But, you know, for now, I think that, yeah, you want to pluck those guys, because now they're ripe for the plucking. You know, because like the guy they just signed, you know, he had good offers, you know, not great, but it wasn't like the old here, you know, Oklahoma, Clemson, blah, blah, blah. But they were good schools. And you know, frankly, if you're Georgia, Alabama, blah, 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 you're not in the projection. You don't have to be in the projection business right now.
Exactly. You don't need to be. I mean, this is the early period. And one of the benefits of getting to the top rankings and winning out and all that stuff is that you can have the luxury of pushing people out of your class and taking new players consistently. You can kind of really pick and choose and be selective. When you're a team like Florida, you kind of have to rely right now on getting players early and hoping that your early devotion to them, so to speak, leads to them kind of fending off some of these later schools that are going to come into the mix. And and you're really going to have to bank on that before the wins come. And we know that Billy Napier expects them to come. It's not as stressful right now for the football team as it is for the Florida men's basketball team, because they still have had three scholarships to give out before this weekend. They got a huge addition over the weekend, though, in St. Bonaventure point guard Kyle Lofton. This is a guy that started all 116 games with the Bonnies, helped lead them to the A-10 championship, averaged 13.9 points per game, gives Florida 3 capable point guards, and that's before even factoring in Myron Jones, who returns for his 5th year and is very capable as well. That's a huge addition for them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, suddenly, you know, I don't know about you, but I wish this was November 20th and they were starting, because I'm really anxious to see what this team looks like. Because, you know, unlike the football people we're talking about, you know, you have some solid track record to go on with these guys. And, you know, I mean, St. Bonaventure, that's quality basketball.
It is.
They play there. It's not like, you know, you're bringing in a guy from East Montana State. And so he, you know, and a guy who started every game, I mean, and, you know, he's played 4 years. You know, this is his super senior year.
Turns 23 at the end of the month.
He's almost as old as you. And so this looks like the kind of guy you can plug in and say, you know, run the offense. And between him and, you know, the other guys, they signed the kid from LSU. And, I mean, these are 4 potential. I mean, you could see them maybe not starting, but they're going to be competing for starting positions. And as you said, they still have 2 to go. So, But I think it all gets back to the foundational piece of Colin Castleton coming back, and you built around him. So suddenly, a month ago or when Golden first came in, you're thinking, well, what's he going to make of this? So you're looking at this and, you know, this is an intriguing roster and going to be an intriguing season.
It is, certainly. And you mentioned the two other available spots still for this team to add. I think that a lot of people expect one is going to go to Riley Kugel, the shooting guard out of Dr. Phillips, who was the teammate of Florida signee at point guard Denzel Aberdeen. So you get a pair of teammates if that does end up happening. And though the third spot is kind of intriguing, we really don't know what Florida's going to do. It's looking like it's going to be a transfer portal addition. It could be one of Kyle Lofton's teammates. Josh Mbala is one who entered the transfer portal on April 26th. They could go in a variety of directions, but the expectation, I think, now is that it's going to be someone who can play in the front court. I think Florida's backcourt is pretty set aside from Kugel.
I mean, to think, especially with Lofton coming in, you want bodies, but you don't want too many bodies. And they could use some help up front more so than in the backcourt at this point.
Yeah, and it would be a lot more dire of a situation, and you kind of alluded to this. They didn't retain some of those big names. Colin Castleton, certainly, the one you want to build around, but Kawasi Reeves, I mean, a guy who could have followed Mike White to Georgia, and certainly there was some belief for a time that he may explore that option and enter his name in the transfer portal, ultimately decides not to do that. Maybe there's some NIL enticement there. I don't want to call it inducement.
I don't know. I did see a new Ferrari driving around campus, but we're not going
full of a windshield of tickets.
We're not going to connect those dots.
Yeah, you don't really know now. You don't know what leads to a player coming back.
Plus, I don't know if he's Ferrari level yet. That's that he
levels to this.
Yes, if Anthony Richardson is driving a new Charger, that's good. But he's probably NIL wise, he's probably number one on campus right now.
Yeah, you got to think that everyone is going to look around, especially on a basketball team, 13 scholarships, and going to look around and be like, well, if we're both competing for the starting point guard spot, why is he driving or why is his NIL deal different than mine? That is the new reality.
Yeah, and we saw it played out in Miami a couple weeks ago, when they bought in the transfer from somewhere in the south at Texas, and he got the $800,000 deal.
And what Miami's doing
and the guy they had said, hey, look at me, I only got the $100,000 deal, but by saying that he had to back off, because then it was obvious he was he had a help wanted to, we'll dribble for a hire sign, basically.
we can't even get into I don't even want to say his name on here, but
that's a whole other conversation.
We're a Florida Gators podcast. We are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk Florida baseball and softball, because they are in the midst of or beginning their push for the postseason. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come right back.
USA Today's Florida Sports Network covers the Sunshine State better than anyone else. We have reporters and columnists covering Florida, Florida State, and Miami, the Dolphins, Jaguars, and Bucks. Like NASCAR, we've got you covered. We also provide the most comprehensive high school coverage available, and so much more. In fact, we have 17 news sites that encompass the state. Hi, I'm Tim Walters, host of the State of Florida Sports Podcast. Each week, this podcast utilizes our Florida Sports Network of beat writers, columnists, and some special guests to bring you up to speed on the most important sports topics. From Pensacola to Jacksonville, to Palm Beach to Naples, and all points in between, we've got you covered. The State of Florida Sports Podcast can be found wherever you listen to podcasts, as well as on any of our state news sites.
And we are back with the Gator Sports Podcast. I am your host, Graham Hall, joined to my left by my co-host, David Whitley. We are talking Florida baseball and some Florida softball. Let's start with baseball, because there's a little bit more intrigue, I think, in terms of whether they'll make the postseason now that Florida softball is hosting a regional in the NCAA tournament. The baseball team, it was all doom and gloom in April.
Yeah.
It was April showers, certainly, but now there are some May flowers.
Oh,
let's say
I like
that. Yeah, Florida's won 9 of the last 11, has outscored opponents by more than 50 runs in that stretch. They had a weekend series on the road at Missouri. Florida won the Friday game and then came back to win the Sunday game. Very clutch hitting by Chris Armstrong and Josh Rivera. Good start by Nick Pogue. Great start by Brandon Sproat. Obviously, both those guys pitched a career high, 6 2/3 of an inning in their Friday and Sunday games. Florida has looked much better on the mound than I think a lot of people thought they would after losing Hunter Barco with that elbow injury to Tommy John surgery. He may be done.
Yeah, I don't think we'll see him in an orange and blue uniform.
Yeah,
again.
Very sad. I think there were a lot of people that checked out right away then when you lose your ace.
Sure.
And you're like, well,
it came right, as you said, when they were at the dark. They say it's
6-12 in the SEC.
Yeah, they say it's darkest before the dawn. It's a cliche,
it
was very dark.
We're throwing
then.
All the cliches. Yeah,
but you think
now.
I didn't see a dawn. Because you're right, Barco, he was the one guy that one dependable guy. Oh, you throw him out there, at least there's one win.
Yeah. Okay.
And when he went, you were just looking at a bunch of maybes. And you saw, Sully kept saying, we have talented arms, but they're too young. And somebody's going to click in for him eventually.
Yeah.
One or two. The number said somebody's going to get it, but you kept waiting and waiting and waiting. And now you're finally starting to see it, up. And you mentioned Nick Pogue, he's not a new arm, but he's a reconstructed arm,
right,
with a lot of talent, and that's a huge boost if he can just approach his potential that he had before the Tommy John, and it's coming along too. But the Brandons you mentioned, the kids, Sproat and the other Brandon.
This is tough. You're putting me on the spot.
Yeah,
I'm blanking too.
Yeah, but this just the pitching is finally matured or enough have to where you think they've got a shot. And I remember going to one of the games a few weeks ago, and he was just slowly shaking his head, saying, "I don't know what to do."
Yeah,
and you figure this is a guy who he does know what to do because he's won a national championship, so it's not like he didn't know what the problems were, but he'd addressed them. But it was just a matter of time and hoping that these guys matured, and it's slowly happening. And now, this isn't a national championship caliber. You don't think, none of us expect that, but just to rally and to get some good postseason experience for these guys, and end the year on an upswing would be a really nice, considering where they were just a few weeks ago.
Yeah, and just to see, I think, their head coach's message come to fruition would do a lot, not only for the guys on the roster, but also the recruits. I think that Florida has sold top 10 expectations consistently under O'Sullivan, and he hasn't really, in the past couple of years, adjusted his recruiting philosophy with the way the game has changed. Identifying players in the transfer portal, several other factors like that. But I got to give him a whole lot of credit, and I think a lot of other people do. There have been accusations of being checked out and not constructing the roster correctly. Mm-hmm. But really, since the beginning of the season, since before the season, he has preached that message of patience time and time again. Everything you just said, we're going to have to wait for some guys to get back. Tyler Nesbitt and Nick Pogue, two guys coming back from Tommy John surgery, they knew that they'd be back around early March, but you never knew when they would be themselves again. Mm-hmm. And now you're seeing Nick Pogue throw like he is capable. And I think that you're also seeing Brandon Sproat get more comfortable in his role and really understand what's at stake for not just Florida season, but his individual career. So I think that if I'm Kevin O'Sullivan, I'd feel like I deserve to gloat a little bit, because you said that if we just kind of, a lot of those games in April could have gone either way. I think that a lot of people realize that. And they knew that if they could just get fully healthy by May and make this push, that the schedule at the end was very favorable. Florida State tonight is not going to be an easy game, but South Carolina, that's a team that is not in a better position than Florida. You're talking about still finishing around 500 in the SEC, and that's nothing to be disappointed with.
Yeah, and then you in theory, so they win the series this weekend, South Carolina, that gives them some momentum going into Hoover. And then they're the proverbial team you don't want to play, because they're kind of playing with nothing. There's no great expectations on this bunch.
Yeah.
They go up there and whatever happens, happens. But just to get to the playoffs, get a regional somewhere and just get some experience for these guys would be a big plus on this year. And, but hey, the softball team, they're already there.
Yeah, they are. And, you mentioned hosting a regional. That's what Florida softball is going to do this weekend. They're hosting as a site in the NCAA tournament. Florida just hosted the softball tournament for the first time since 2005. Florida ended up winning the first game on Wednesday. They faced Texas A&M at 5 p.m., a Texas A&M team that had to win the night before in order to set that game up, and then Florida beats them 4-1. And then on Thursday, the Gators face a team that was more well-rested than them in number 4 seed Kentucky, and Florida handles business, wins 9-3, comes up against that Arkansas team that's only lost, what, 9 games. I don't think many people, based on how senior night went a couple of weeks ago, thought that Florida was going to have a chance in that game, but they did out-hit the Razorbacks, just couldn't come up with the victory. The Razorbacks had as many runs and as many hits. Florida loses 4-1 before the Razorbacks end up winning the SEC tournament. Florida's still in, though, as the number 14 seed. They'll take on Canisius University Friday at 4:30 p.m.
What do you know about Canisius? I'll admit,
absolutely nothing.
Yeah, I'm pretty much with you, but I do expect them to win that.
Yeah.
And I mean, they need to get out of this, obviously, or you know, it'll be stamped as a disappointing year.
I did see their logo earlier, and I got to say, if I wasn't in the media, I would be interested in just rocking a Canisius. I hope I'm saying that right.
I'm not. I've seen it forever, but I've never actually heard it pronounced. Canisius.
Canisius. I hope I'm not.
It sounds like an Old Testament prophet.
I hope I'm not butchering it. But Speaking of Old Testament, their logo, they're the Golden Griffins. They have like a huge golden, griffin with wings on top of their. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is
not
that
just
is
a griffin, but
dope,
a golden.
Man.
It's sort of like reminds me of UCF, which they were the Golden Knights, and then they decided they didn't want the golden. Now they're just the Knights.
They're just Knights. Yeah, so don't drop the Golden Griffins. Don't drop the Golden Griffins. I mean, Griffins, you drop Golden, you might as well be like a last name.
Right, the Griffins.
Yeah, you got to go by the Golden Griffins so we know what you're talking about.
That's like Family Guy.
Yeah, rock the logo proudly. I mean, it's not the Florida head logo, but that's a cool logo in my mind.
But with all due respect to the Golden Griffins, I think that the Gators would be very disappointed if they were KO'd by them, even though it's a double elimination. And so they need to get out of this and the expectations are always high with softball. And I saw where Tim Walton was saying, we can win it all. I know he believes that. I mean, sure they can, but I don't think anybody really expects it out of this team. But, to get to the College World Series would be, a successful year at this point. And, they've got the potential.
Yeah, certainly they do. I've said time and time again that the one bright side, in a sense, when it comes to college athletics of the pandemic is how loaded some of these rosters are with the additional 6-year and players just kind of deciding to stay around and just the opportunities available. I think at all of these schools, you're seeing some of the deepest level of play just across the board. But, the tournament is a very interesting one. It's very similar to March Madness, in a sense, kind of like May Madness. You're facing a team that did what you couldn't do. They just won their conference and knocked off Iona and Siena. Yeah. Teams that are not great, but they're riding a hot streak. You can't take them for granted.
And so next week, we'll be sitting here with all apologies to the Golden Griffins. And I may order a shirt then. And get a Golden Griffin shirt.
That'd be pretty cool. That'd be pretty cool.
It's the least we could do after we've sort of made fun of them.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess, a little playfully prodded them. I'd rock some Griffin gear. No doubt about it. We are going to take this final break. And when we come back, we are going to talk about a new coach rocking some Gator gear in Gainesville. We'll be right back after this break.
I'm Blake Topmeyer, and this is SEC Football Unfiltered, a new podcast from the USA Today Network. Each week, we'll discuss the hottest topics that matter to the passionate fan bases of the SEC. I've covered the SEC for 8 years. As for my co-host, longtime sports columnist John Adams, let's just say he's got a few decades on me.
Not as many decades as some people think. Contrary to popular opinion, I did not cover General Nealon, but I did interview Bear Bryant and I interviewed Nick Saban, and I covered Archie Manning and Peyton Manning.
More insightful interview, John. Bear Bryant, Archie Manning, Steve Spurrier, or Johnny Majors?
Gotta go with Steve Spurrier there. He's the great quipster.
SEC Football Unfiltered debuts this summer. Let John and I be your tour guides from the season opener through the national championship. Subscribe and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
And you are listening to the Gator Sports Podcast. We are back after another break for the final segment of this week's episode. Before we get into it, gotta say, we're going to do one more episode before we take a little break here this summer during the doldrums of June before things really ramp up again in July. And we go to Atlanta and go to Destin, you name it, for all the stuff that football entails.
Yeah, this is there's really never a super slow tuck. And obviously with all these tournaments and regions we're talking about, it's maybe the busiest time of the year on the whole. But for the big, the big money sports, it's slow time.
Yeah.
Especially in a couple of weeks. And, we'd love to be here and talk, but frankly, we wouldn't have much to talk about.
Yeah, right. You know, we talk all the time about what we forget to talk about, and there's a lot that goes on here in Gainesville. We got to be completely honest. I mean, track and field, going up there to Oxford and winning the outdoor championships.
Yeah, it'll be interesting because, that the women won the NCAA indoors, and they will be among the favorites to win the NCAA outdoors, which would be quite a double. You know, men, they've got the best relay teams actually in the world right now, which is pretty impressive when you think about it. And so that's worth watching. And then, lacrosse, they had a big weekend. I mean, there's so much going on right now.
Right. I was out at lacrosse on Friday and Sunday, and as they advanced in the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament, now they head up to Champaign, Illinois for a rematch with number two overall Maryland, who has just lost one game. The Terrapins just stomped Duke by double digits to advance to the Elite Eight there in the NCAA tournament. This may be it for Florida. This is a tough team to face, but they're hoping that they can make a run for their final NCAA championship in lacrosse.
Yeah. We haven't even mentioned tennis, where they're defending national champions.
And because they kind of are like so dominant that it really is only news around here when they lose. I mean, I wrote a preview last week. It's on Gatorsports.com. You can check it out. I talked to Andy Andrade about just what this team is looking to do, and I'm kind of laughing because I wrote the profile all around him saying, yeah, we don't expect to lose. Mm-hmm. We're going to be fine. And, I'm setting the stage for them being in the Sweet 16, and then they go out and stomp North Carolina, a team that was just utterly dominant over their last 10 matches, and a number 15 ranked team. The Gators beat them 4-0 here, and now they're heading up to Champaign, Illinois.
Right. Champaign's the place to be these days.
Absolutely.
But it is funny how under the radar great that tennis program. I mean, it is, Brian Shelton, he's the Nick Saban of college tennis, what he's built there. And anything less than a national championship will be a disappointment. I hate to sound like a Bama football fan, but these guys are good, as they say.
Yeah, they are certainly. Someone who is hoping to be good at Florida and is just beginning her Florida career is the new soccer coach, and you and I were on site yesterday to meet her. Her name is Samantha Bohan. She comes from Embry-Riddle University, played at Duke University, went to North Carolina for her master's. Pretty interesting crosses of allegiances.
Good,
let's say that.
An interesting resume, and then she was an assistant at Tennessee.
Assistant at Tennessee.
So she's gotten the taste of it, and then she's from the Daytona
Ormond Beach, yep.
Ormond Beach, and Embry-Riddle's there, and she started that. And they were NAIA, and then she's taken them from NAIA up to NCAA D2. And she's got a long resume that's impressive at that level. All right, so people, it's another one of those Scott Strickland, I'm going to pluck someone from a lower level and put them here, and I think they can excel. Same Billy Napier, same thing, Todd Golden. Done it. Will they do it? We don't know. But, and I got to say, she was, you always win the press conference, but she almost, it was almost like an avalanche and unfair on the press conference when they bring in her and her three, just bright eyed little kids running around. And it just had a night. And also, they bring in the Gator legend.
Yeah. And we found out from talking to both of them that was a big reason how Samantha ended up at UF and why she wanted to come to UF. She's friends, childhood friends, with Florida legend Danielle Fotopoulos, who that name may ring some bells to people. Just an incredibly impressive player, but she has remained a presence in Gainesville around the program. She has a close relationship with former coach Becky Burley. They all keep in contact. And unbeknownst to, I think, all of us, she has known Samantha even longer. They played on the same club team when they were 13 years old and became good friends, stayed in contact. And we found out that Samantha was in Danielle's wedding.
Mm-hmm.
All these things. They right. they talk on the phone.
Took her out. On, you know, went for her ankle. And when they played, Duke
yeah,
played Florida.
Took her out.
The Duke won. So yeah, she
got said, the best okay. of her. We found out she was, you know, such a competitor and a winner. She reached out to the university program, to the University of Florida program, to throw her hat, her name in that ring. You know, I'm blowing the cliche here, to make herself a candidate yeah. and. Ultimately, Florida trusts Danielle's opinion and who she was. But I think more importantly, you kind of just alluded to this. The Gators right now are in a place, I think, where it's safer to make the unknown higher. Because the way the program is set up with academics and facilities and you name it, being in the SEC, they really believe that if a coach has had success somewhere else for a long period of time, that you know, it's going to be easier for them to have success when they come to Florida. Now they have an abundance
right.
of things at their disposal.
Well, you mentioned it yesterday, the resources that are available here as opposed to Embry-Riddle.
Yeah.
And what she can do. And I mean, I imagine her recruiting budget is probably as big as the entire athletic budget.
Exactly.
At Embry-Riddle was.
Way bigger.
And she obviously knows the game. I mean, she was on the U.S. national team. You know that the epic one, the legendary one in '99 with Brandi Chastain that
right.
won the World Cup. So she knows how to coach, and in an odd way, this is a really important hire for Scott Strickland just because of what has happened with the last coach, you know, Tony Amato. He lasted a year, and that coming on the heels of you know the Cam Neubauer thing, and so the last two women's coaches that he hired. Just saying, to be frank, were disastrous.
Yeah,
you know, and so this is one that you got to get right.
Yeah,
and just judging by everything yesterday, you think that well, this is a woman that is not going to you know, the things that happened with both the basketball and Amato. You don't see them happening here. Just the lack of relationships and the problems that caused and the bad headlines that caused. You don't see that emanating from her.
Yeah, the proximity to the UF program, I think, is just incredibly intriguing because with Amato, with Neubauer, you're bringing in someone who had no ties to really anyone within the program. No one who could personally go to the athletic director and say, I've known
yeah.
this person my entire life. I'm willing to put my name out there. I mean, you have someone in Danielle who's willing to come out there and say, you know, I'm vouching for
yeah.
this person. And Scott Strickland, not to, you know, make this controversial at all, I think that after what you just mentioned about the previous two hires, there has to be something that's alluring, you know,
right.
that is desirable about having a legend who will come out there and,
yeah.
and take well, some I mean, of the credit for you.
He admitted, you know, that there's no way not to admit that the Neubauer thing was just... You know, was just an unmitigated disaster at the end.
Yeah.
And that, you know, he had vetted him, and you call people and they give him the thumbs up and blah, blah, blah. But obviously, either they weren't telling him enough or he wasn't asking the right people or whatever. And, you know, and I thought, well, they need to bring in an outside firm to help out and ask these questions and ask them. Yes. And he said, well, I've done that twice, including Tony Amato.
Yeah, get your money back.
Yeah, that was the worst $20,000 they've ever spent.
Yeah.
The University of Florida.
Where are those receipts, right?
Yeah, and it's not that, you know, that this guy, you know, would had, you know, like a criminal record, you know, that they didn't uncover. But yeah, somewhere along the lines, they didn't get the information they needed to get on
yeah.
some of these guys.
You know, I think that we forget how lengthy some of these processes can actually take compared to, I think, the Samantha hiring. The hirings of Cam Neubauer and Tony Amato were done much quicker, in a sense, because you're talking to outside, you know, firms, and you're trusting them, and then you have a couple conversations, and then you're trying to make this year-long mm-hmm. commitment. They knew about Samantha for several years. They play Embry-Riddle every single year. They, from the conversations between Scott and Danielle and Becky, this was someone that had been discussed over the previous few years as someone who should be in consideration. And I hate to you know, go this far even, but if anything, it's kind of a correction of a mistake that happened in the first place a year ago.
Yeah, and because let's just put it this way: if this turns into a third strike, then we're going to be talking about some serious problems, that, you know, and with Scott Strickland. But you know, hopefully that won't be the case.
Yeah, and yeah. I think that even if this does go wrong, you know, there's enough, I think, of a of a buffer in a sense. Well, it's going to prevent the criticism from extending really to being
if it goes wrong, I think it'll just be something goes wrong on the field and nothing that will make the headlines. It'll just be, well, for whatever reason, she couldn't win here. It won't be players saying, you know, I felt insecure, I felt threatened, and the kind of things that really gives a school a bad image.
Yeah, you know, we got to be totally honest. You know, we did, in talking with Scott and Samantha yesterday, ask some pretty tough questions. You know, I asked Samantha straight up just how important is the communication aspect between head coach and administration for you? Because that has been something that since the Cameron Neubauer, let's call it scandal, really has been stressed by Scott so that they can get out ahead and avoid these things. And I think that that's what led to the quick decision on Tony Amato. And so whatever coach came in here, whether it's Kelly Ray Finley, whether it's Samantha Bohan, both of those coaches are going to have to just be asked and grapple with what they are succeeding, so to speak.
You're right. I mean, if anything, I think Scott Stricken learned he let the Neubauer thing fester too long, so he wasn't going to let that happen with Amato.
Yeah.
And, you know, 1 year, sorry, it, you know, it's just not working out.
Yeah, get out ahead of it.
And so you're done with it. But, I mean, you're right. Yesterday it was, you know, and I asked Scott, you know, I said, you know, after what's happened, do you feel more pressure now to get this one right? And, you know, he said, well, you know, there's always pressure, blah, blah, blah. But this isn't just your standard, I'm hiring a women's soccer coach kind of hire.
Right.
It has a little bit more implication than that.
It certainly does. Well, that's all we got. Certainly a lot has happened in the past week, and we always love talking it all over. We'll be back next week before taking a quick break for summer. This has been another episode of the Gator Sports Podcast. Everybody take care.
Adios. Adios.